A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Do you enjoy this podcast but wish you had more weekly short doses of insights and nuggets? Well, if you didn't know, I recently launched an email newsletter where you can join and connect with a community of like-minded young women around the world, also on the journey of personal growth. This weekly email includes everything from mindful insights and finds, tips on living well, relationships, my personal experiences, and a lot more. Subscribe to get your weekly email newsletter. The link is directly in this podcast episode show notes, or you can head directly to my website at emilyelizabeth.blog and you can sign up from there.
Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast.
Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the What Fulfills You podcast. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host. And for today's episode from the vault, I am bringing back episode 185 with co-founder of Array, Sif Hyder. And a little bit more about Sif. She was working in the beauty space as a blogger and podcaster and found herself struggling with her own health issues. She ultimately turned to natural remedies as a last resort and began troubleshooting with her own combination of herbs and vitamins and found herself feeling better than ever. She quickly realized that holistic remedies had the power to address women's toughest day-to-day health issues and began building Array with her husband, Nish, to share these solutions with others. One of the reasons why I'm bringing back this episode is because we talked on so many different topics that I know is valuable to all of you guys, whether that's from brand building or health issues or even best relationship tips and habits. Something that I admire about her and Nish is that they've been together since college and they actually did long distance for a little bit. And so she touched on some of her insights on that, especially having her husband as her business partner as well. So you can imagine they spend a lot of time with each other. And I love that she shared quite a lot of good nuggets on that and also just her own productivity and habits to being her best self, which I know we all are always doing. With that being said, let's welcome Sif Hyder to the podcast. Well, Sif, thank you so much for coming into the studio today. I'm excited we timed it well with you being in New York, and I know I used to live in LA, so I prefer, you know, in person over Zoom.
So do I.
It's more fun, you know?
The quality of conversation is always better. Like, yes. I mean, as a podcaster, I get it. Yeah. I only record in person, yeah.
Well, let's just dive into it. How about we get a glimpse into your background? Can you start from, like, your blogging days and, like, way back in the day before Array? So we can kind of paint a picture of how you really got here. You know what I mean? Because sometimes we're like, oh, my God, how do I become that successful, or how do I build something like that? And as I'm sure you know, a lot of us often have these little pillars along the way that kind of helped us gain the skill to do something like what we do today. So can you share that?
Yeah, of course. So I think what's really interesting and kind of a misconception that I had when I was growing up was that, you know, you were supposed to graduate from college and have everything figured out and have this like robust career, which was that was it, you know? And what I've realized now looking back in my life is that when you come out of college, you're not even a fully formed adult. And so it's okay to find your way. And that's kind of what happened with me. So I mean, I'll keep it short because I've had like quite an interesting journey getting to where I am today. But, you know, I graduated from college, thought I wanted to get into PR. And so, you know, that's what I did. And then while I was at like working in PR, like internships and stuff, I was like, wait a minute. The thing that I really like from here, this whole experience, is the writing bit. Yeah. I loved writing press releases. Anytime it was anything creative to do with writing, I was like, this is really my jam. This is where I'm thriving.
Got it.
So then I was like, okay, I'm going to go into, you know, I want to work at a magazine.
Right.
And so that's what I pursued. And I started blogging before getting my first job at a magazine because I needed a creative outlet.
Yeah.
I loved the kind of creative freedom that I had while, you know, posting and creating on my own website. I could write about whatever I wanted. I could take the kind of pictures that I wanted.
Yeah.
And also I thought that, okay, if I have a blog, it'll only serve me in showing magazines that I have good ideas and I can take initiative. And so I landed a job at a magazine, which is where I worked for about a year and a half before I quit to go full time with my blog. And then I worked on my blog all the way up until essentially I started Array and started my podcast also right before I started Array. So,
oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Wait, I have so many questions from that. So what year did you start blogging? Because we both know, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 25 and blogging goes like way back. And you know what I mean? Like today, unfortunately, I think blogging is a little bit like it's more influencers versus bloggers. But when did you start that part?
I started in 2015, I want to say.
Okay.
And then I went full time with it in 2016.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
How did you start like making money from that right off? Because again, it was a little bit different.
I was not making money. Okay. I didn't even know you could monetize a blog.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I, this was like, right now, you can go to school to learn how to be a digital creator.
Right, right.
I mean, when I started, there was none of that. It was like magazines were still king.
That's
and
true.
So that's why it was my dream to work at one. It's just it just happened that along the way, I started being offered these brand partnerships. I had no idea what it meant. I remember the first kind of collaboration email I got. I thought it was spam.
Okay.
I was like, why would someone want to send me something?
Imagine,
that's so weird.
Yeah.
And then the world essentially changed. You know, and I was approached by a talent management agency and, you know, like I signed with them and then they would bring me deals. Deals would come in. But when I quit my job, Emily, it's not like I was making a lot of money. I wasn't.
Yeah.
It's just I felt that I had the potential to work on something that I really loved. I saw a lot more longevity because I was working at a magazine when the kind of the tail end of the golden era, you know?
Yes,
so
that's true.
That's when we saw that the number of pages in the magazine were kind of dwindling. It was just past that golden age. And so, and I was working on the digital side of the magazine.
Right.
And so I could see that that was the future. This was also at the time where, you know, editors would come back from a trip to Coachella and be like, I was on the same trip as a 21-year-old blogger, an 18-year-old blogger. And I was like, this is the future because they are trying to catch up to what's happening in the digital age and digitally native creators. Have full autonomy. There's no hierarchy. There's no approval process. You're just going for it and creating. So it was almost a democratization of media. And because I had I'd already started building a community, I was being approached to do brand deals. And it was just getting to a point where I kind of saw the fact that I'm kind of at a crossroads in my career. I can continue kind of down this magazine path or I can take a bet on myself. And I was just, you know, when you're in your early 20s, what the hell do you have to lose?
Right, right, exactly.
So I just went for it.
Yeah. Question, because I would have faced it and I still, I did actually initially when I quit my corporate job a year and a half ago, but did your parents or family have any opposition to you leaving?
No.
Oh, okay, that's good.
My dad, my parents initially didn't understand what I was doing.
Right.
But what my parents did understand was that it was a business.
Okay.
And I come from an entrepreneurial family. My dad has his own business and he told me to take the bet on myself.
Yeah.
And again, it was like, what am I going to lose? Do I have, you know, a child? Do I have to, you know, there was like very little for me to really worry about. And if you don't take a bet on yourself in your early 20s when you have such little to lose, when are you going to do it? Thankfully, I've been brought up with the, because my dad was the same way. He didn't take a job and instead kind of went on his entrepreneurial journey at 21 years of age.
And that's a whole different environment too.
Totally.
Back in the day.
Totally. Yeah. So, and he took a lot of risks, you know, and it led to, thankfully, him being very successful at what he does. So I kind of grew up with that model. And so I was kind of always fearless, and my parents were always very supportive as well. They always believed in me.
Oh, that's amazing. What about your podcast? So you started that around what year?
End of 2018, early 2019.
Okay, yeah. So this is like before the boom of podcasting as well. What was that process like for you? And I definitely want to dive into whether that contributed to the start of Array or like how it kind of crossed over with one another. Like, what was kind of your goal with podcasting at that time? Because I'm assuming you were also still blogging as well.
Yeah, so every time I would share something interesting, say for example it was a new skincare product or a new wellness trend or a book that I had read or some habit thing I was doing, I would always get questions from my community being like, hey, can you do a full blog post on this topic? Can you do a deep dive into this skincare ingredient? Can you talk a little bit about this supplement that you're taking? Whatever it was.
Yeah.
And my thinking was, okay, the reason I pick up these things is because I read a lot, okay? I'm a voracious reader, crazy researcher. But my thought process behind starting a podcast was, okay, what if I could bring people, like my community, the information straight from the source, you know? And so speak to those experts in all those categories that my audience was really interested in hearing about, you know? And that was anything from skincare to how to build a business, whatever that was. And so that was the motive behind starting the podcast. In terms of how it led to Array, honestly, there was no correlation there, Emily. It was just Array was like a fully different idea. And I didn't start Array in order to kind of start a business. You know, that wasn't my motive. It was like, I think we can help people with this product and we need to give it to people. That was kind of the motive behind starting the business.
What was your personal health journey around, you know, maybe bloating or just like your experience with realizing like the conventional route of resolving some of what a lot of us women kind of face? And, you know, I've had a lot of bloating issues throughout college and I've loved trying the bloat pills. It's been really fun. I love, by the way, the packaging is so cute.
Thank
I mean, I'm
you.
Sure everyone told you that, but it's like so chic. I plopped it on my counter. I'm like, this is so damn cute.
Oh my God, that makes me so happy. So essentially my, I guess, entry into holistic wellness was really out of my own need. So I had a very bad history of just a bad relationship with my immune system. I was always that person who was on the hamster wheel of getting sick, antibiotics, getting better, doing it all over again. And, you know, it was just impeding on the way that I was living my life. I was not kind of – in my early 20s, I wasn't this, like, radiant, kind of full of life and vitality sort of early 20-year-old, you know? And so basically, like, in my early 20s, I ended up fracturing a rib from a chronic cough. And when I went to my doctor, I was prescribed codeine. And there was no plan forward, you know? There wasn't a plan as to, okay, this is what's happened to you now. Let's make sure that it doesn't happen to you again. Here are the steps to kind of repair your immune system and ensure that you get back to feeling like a 20-year-old should. And so out of desperation, I decided to look into holistic wellness, which back then was very weird. You know, it was like hippies and, you know, just people I didn't identify with talking about it. Or you'd really have to go and do deep research to find the right resources. Yeah. Nowadays, anyone who wants to learn about holistic wellness, it's all out there. There's, you know, it's not so hard to find.
Yeah, exactly.
And so as I started researching, I obviously started experimenting on myself and started to notice huge shifts in my immune system. And then obviously from there, I was like, okay, I wonder if I can, you know, help my digestive system. And I wonder if I can help my fatigue and all of these other issues. And as I started to notice shifts in my own well-being, my then boyfriend, now husband and co-founder, Nish, and I realized that there was this huge white space in the wellness market. And we really wanted to create essentially a wellness brand that was 100% natural, you know, results oriented, formulated by a doctor, and something really beautiful so that women would get super excited to use it the same way that we get really excited to use our skincare. So that was basically the background behind my foray into this area and why Array was even born.
When it came to observing what else is on the market, how did you look at it from, like, what you wanted to bring to market versus what's already out there, like probiotics, for example? Like, how were you kind of observing your approach that would come in differently? And then also, like, maybe observing, oh, we would love to be in, I'm sure, like, Whole Foods and, like, places like that at some point. What was kind of, like, your thought process during that?
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
My thought process back then is the same process that it is today, which is I don't look at what other people are doing. And the reason behind that is if there was a widespread, pervasive solution, then people wouldn't be complaining about it. And every time I met with friends, every time I was at dinner or brunch or catching up with people, you know, people would talk about how bloated and anxious they were. If there was a solution, why was everyone complaining about it? And I knew that probiotics were widespread in the market, but a probiotic alone is not going to solve your digestive issues. And so I knew that there needed to be something different, and what existed wasn't working. And so that was that's how I've continued to operate the business and kind of everything that I do. I don't look at what other people are doing because I am also of the belief that there's room for everyone. You know, there may be another brand that does supplements or whatever. It may resonate with you, but it may not resonate with your best friend. So there's room for everyone. Like, look at the skincare category. There's new brands popping up every day of the week. And they're all thriving. Or so many of them are thriving, you know?
What about when it came to getting into stores, right? Did you ever face a time where one of the buyers was like, you know, there are things are too similar in our store? Did anyone ever say that? Or at least like, oh, okay, that's good.
No. We, first of all, like our primary thing was that we were going to focus on e-commerce and direct to consumer. We thought that we could win that way. And for anyone who's kind of thinking about getting into stores, you want to build brand equity to make that really easy. So for example, say you launch a brand today. Tomorrow you go to Target and you're like, hey, Target, I want to get into your store because I have this brand. Even if they say yes, no one knows about you. You've not built any brand equity. How's it moving from shelves? So what happens if you get into a mass retailer too soon is actually a number of things. Number one, if no one knows about your brand, they may not buy it. And so when that happens, that mass retailer has the right to slash your prices. It'll look horrible on shelves. It'll be dusty and just like not taken care of. And then you, as the creator of that brand, are going to have to buy back your own inventory. It's a huge issue when it comes to your margins and it's not the right thing to do. Number two, if you go into a mass retailer right away, you have no idea, like a new brand owner does not have the capacity to even understand what it takes to be successful in retail, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm talking from an operational standpoint.
Yeah.
You don't know whether when it's getting to the retailer, it's arriving in the right condition. If you have a warehouse, they could be, you know, like just messing up the way that they're packaging it.
Right.
It could be like bumps. It could be weird things when it comes to the presentation.
Yeah.
If you start off with smaller retailers, mm-hmm. you can work out the kinks within your own operations to ensure that when the day does come that you're ready for a mass retailer, mm-hmm. you are ready from all fronts. You are ready from the operations standpoint. You have built enough brand equity so that your product moves and that a retailer doesn't have a chance to really complain about you. So that was always my thought process when it came to retail. I didn't want to be a brand that went into a retailer too quickly before we were ready for it.
Yeah.
Also, retail is a very expensive thing to take on when you're a young brand. You know, you need a lot of money because typically retailers have 30 to 60 day payment terms. Yeah. Now, if they're taking, you know, 3,000 units of inventory and you're a tiny little brand that's only produced 5,000.
Right.
And you're losing 50 to 60% margins, that's a tough thing to take on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with retailers now, it's a lot easier because they approach us and they've seen us, they've seen our brand, and they want to champion us because they believe in us.
Yeah.
And retailers also want to, you know, take on the cool indie brands.
Yeah.
And that's what they will kind of nurture.
Mm-hmm.
So
you started the brand back in like 2019, right?
2020.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So show the process of like the beginning days, like were you packing and shipping all of this? Like I want to hear like that, and then like how you slowly progressed, like how the e-commerce scaled out, and then also getting into like the smaller stores and how you started to do that more hands-on before kind of expanding into maybe like actually having, you know, like a warehouse, like hold certain inventory.
So yes, we were doing everything on our own when we started.
Mm-hmm.
We started literally out of our apartment. I was hand packaging everything along with Nish.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we were scrappy because we had not raised money.
Mm-hmm.
So it was literally just bootstrapped. And when you're bootstrapped, you have to be scrappy.
Yeah.
So we started doing everything on our own. When it came to a point where there were literally not enough hours in the day for us to package while also pushing the business forward from a strategy perspective, we hired someone to help with packaging. And that was a huge kind of step up for us because I was like, oh my God, all of a sudden I have all this time to focus on strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether that's marketing or Nish was focusing more on operations, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I guess, like a big step up. And then from there, in terms of small retailers, again, this was really not a focus for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we, I don't even know who the first small retailer we got into was. Maybe it wasn't until last year.
Mm-hmm.
So for a full year, we were just like fully, and even now, like I don't consider us a retail heavy business. Our entire business is maybe like 3% of our entire business is retail.
Oh, really?
Everything else
is
e-com. Yeah.
Okay. What was your initial struggles with, like, of course, you know, it's like it's a new brand and you're selling a type of product that you would usually, like a consumer, it's easier to like just pick it up in store, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's maybe less, especially when you first started, less of something you would think, oh, I'm just going to order this online, right? How was that process for you in actually like getting it known in terms of your marketing strategy and like the first year?
So I don't know if I agree with what you just said. And the reason I say this is because if you look at consumer behavior when it comes to purchasing supplements, it's typically online. Amazon is a big outlet. And then people go to actually like websites for companies. I was actually having this conversation with a few people the other day, and we were just chatting and asking each other, okay, so where do you go for your supplements? You know, maybe you pick it up at Whole Foods, but you're not exploring Whole Foods for the hot new supplement, you know, or that's at least the consumer patterns that we know based on data. And so we knew that our opportunity to win was really through e-com. And we thought we could do a direct to consumer, which is kind of the strategy that we went for. Where I think one of my strong suits, yeah. you know, my skills is marketing. I yeah. come from that background. And because I've worked in PR, mm-hmm. You know, publishing and as a creator, mm-hmm. I feel like I have a very robust 360 view yeah. on marketing. And so yeah. I just leaned into that, Emily. You mm-hmm. know, I gifted really heavily to influencers, to doctors, to like people in wellness. Yeah. And it was like a flywheel effect, you know, yeah. where it was. It started with, like, you know, a couple of micros talking about us here and then there. Mm-hmm. And then I've said this like a million times before, but Melissa Wood was really the person that got us on the map. Mm. I'd gifted her like pre-launch, essentially.
Oh, wow.
And towards the end of March 2020, which mm-hmm. was, I mean, our brand was like brand new.
Yeah.
I saw her talking about us on a live. Or oh, wow. I didn't even see that. I was just, all these sales started rolling in and we're like, where is this coming from? We were right. so confused.
Right.
And someone from my community sent me a screenshot of her talking about us on a live.
Oh, wow.
And then from there, you know, it was, you know, other people trying the supplements, mm-hmm. Influencers, like a few like big influencers and celebrities buying the supplements, yeah. talking about it on their own channel. It was very organic. And,
yeah.
you know, anytime we'd see a name, we would, Nish and I would be glued to our Shopify, mm-hmm. like looking for any names,
yeah.
being like, okay, like so and so ordered, because we didn't know how to blind gift and we didn't think that it was the right thing to do either.
Right.
So, say like a, I don't know, like an A-list person ordered, we'd make sure that we sent them like, the other products that we wanted them to try, you know, whether yeah. that was like if they ordered bloat, we'd send them calm, the right. capsule case, like all right. of the things, you right. know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, it was also, we have always believed very deeply in treating our customers like influencers, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, when it comes to the packaging experience, when it comes to the customer experience, they are treated like influencers. And yeah. that's how we started from day one. So we had very strong word of mouth. Nish and I would take customer service calls. Like, I mean, they would go straight to Nish's cell phone.
Yeah.
So we had a really deep connection with our community. And, mm-hmm. you know, they've been really incredible at telling literally everyone, mm-hmm. you know. So we kind of fired on all fronts.
Yeah.
We took care of our customers really, really well. And we treated them like they were everything to us, which they were.
Yeah.
And then influencers as well were excited, I think, to have a product available that I think was so relevant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was all of that. It was also a little bit of timing. Like, you know, people, it was right during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Everyone was anxious and bloated, and our products served that need. So yeah. that's kind of how we looked at everything. Also, when it came to retail, yeah. everything was closed.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
know?
That's
so
right.
you had to do then. E-com.
Right. When it came to gifting, like you mentioned, what was that like? Were you, did you go in just wanting to gift and like maybe hoping that it would just spread by word of mouth, like with zero expectations
yeah.
that they would share whatsoever? And,
yeah.
and you would know, okay, that's just that if they don't share about it, like that's what you, that's kind of like what you have to accept.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Because I think that this is the thing that I think a lot of small brands maybe don't understand mm-hmm. is that you can't go into an influencer, any sort of relationship, expecting something from someone, especially
right.
when, you know, an influencer or creator's job, like they're typically paid to post,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
if you are gifting someone, you really have to go into, like, it's a write-off.
Yeah.
It's a write-off. Like,
yeah.
you know, pretend like you never had that money. Just give it to them.
Yeah.
Forget about it. And then all it takes is one person posting, like
mm-hmm.
just one.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they have a strong enough community,
mm-hmm.
You know, an engaged enough audience, like that's it, you
yeah.
know, and that will create the buzz around your business. And then your job is just to keep it going,
yeah.
you know? So
yeah.
gift for, like, this is still, by the way, a part of our strategy. We gift very generously.
Yeah.
We gift to, like, hundreds of people
mm-hmm.
and not just like big influencers, by
yeah,
the way,
yeah.
I'm talking like nano. I'm talking someone like an engaged customer. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think that people really need to be generous with their gifting because it will pay off.
Okay. That's a very interesting, you know, cause I feel like you're the first person I've ever heard that really blatantly said that, like you have to be generous with gifting. Cause I feel like, especially for new people in business that have a product that can be gifted, they can be scared to, you know, like wonder what is the return, or like, can you accept that that's where, like, that's where the dollars are going, versus actually putting the dollars into maybe ads or like certain marketing, other marketing tactics.
What's the dollar that you're putting in? You know, when yeah. you think about the money that you're putting right. into giving away free product,
right.
it's much less than any other channel.
Yeah.
And again, we had to be scrappy, you know, Emily, like we didn't have all this money to put into anything.
Yeah.
So it was like yeah. that was really our best bet, that we had the product, we believed in our product, and we really did believe that if you try it, you mm-hmm. will love it, you know?
Yeah.
And we also believed that this was a product that could change someone's life,
yeah.
you know? And so when I was gifting to people, mm-hmm. I really came from like a soul-centered place, you know? Mm. I would send a really thoughtful email being like, hey, I really think that this product is going to help you
yeah.
live, you know, a better life, feel better on an everyday basis.
Mm-hmm.
Please let me send it to you. Like, there's absolutely no pressure.
Yeah.
And I think also, I mean, you know, I'm someone who really cares about like energy and the intention behind things. And
yeah.
I think if you come at it with a strong product, which mm-hmm. you've created with integrity,
mm-hmm.
you feel like is aligned for the person who you're sending it to, and then
yeah.
you're sending it with good intentions, I don't know, like something happens and like the universe, God, forces conspire to ensure that you're taken care of.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my thought process behind it.
Okay, I want to shift a little bit more into like personal life and relationship
mm-hmm.
because I know that you mentioned that your then boyfriend is now your husband
mm-hmm.
and business partner, which I feel like is a very fun but also probably interesting dynamic that
mm-hmm.
most people don't really get to experience. What would you say are some like your best tips over the years that you've learned in, I guess, like first one being like balancing a relationship on the personal level, but then also the business side and actually drawing boundaries from, you know, making sure it doesn't cause any conflicts in your actual relationship.
So for us, what we've realized is you almost have to be kind of preventative, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is when you're just starting out and, you know, your significant other or your best friend or someone close to you in your life is your business partner, it's really easy to talk about your business all the time,
mm-hmm.
okay? If you do that, essentially you are then only co-founders. You're not in a relationship anymore,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
whatever that relationship is. And
mm-hmm.
so Nish and I were very protective about showing up for each other as, you know, our like significant others
right.
along with co-founders. So, you know, date nights, for example, every week we have date night and
yeah.
we never talk about work during date night. It's
yeah.
just like a hard like no.
Yeah.
And then over time, you know, we've realized that we need to be vocal when we want to shut off from work. So
mm-hmm.
if I've had a really rough day and I just want to go out on a walk, you know, I actually have to be vocal and tell Nish, like, I don't want to talk about work because he's not going to be there reading my mind.
Right,
you know
right,
what
right.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and vice versa. So
yeah.
just drawing those boundaries and, like, being very vocal about it.
Yeah.
Or, for example, like, something happens in my personal life during the day.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, a work problem is bothering me, but I'm feeling emotional about it,
mm-hmm.
then I'll go to Nish and I will say, can you just show up as my husband for 1 second and listen to
mm-hmm.
me? And he will show, like, he'll switch that role,
yeah.
you know, versus like show up as my co-founder who's like, you know, at that 100%. Point you're like, let's solve the fucking problem.
Yes.
Sorry, am I allowed
no,
to
oh, yeah,
yet?
You can swear.
Yeah, so like solve the problem, like, you know, thinking hats on versus like if you want someone to show up as your significant other, it's like, okay, I'm just going to hear you vent
yeah, yeah.
and swear and get really upset
yeah.
and I'll take you out for a donut.
Right.
You know what I
right,
mean? So
right.
it's just being really clear about what you need from the other person.
Yeah.
So that's how we ensure that we have, you know, robust, healthy, like a healthy relationship essentially.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, when we're nearing burnout, we
mm-hmm.
try and go on a trip if we can. We do 2 a year for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
And that really helps us kind of switch up our routine and disconnect from what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's helpful for our mental health and preserving the sanctity of our relationship, I
yeah.
think. And then just on a day-to-day basis in terms of how we operate as well,
mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Nish and I have 2 very different skill sets
mm-hmm.
and we have a lot of trust in one another to excel at what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not there at every meeting that he has and he's not there at every meeting that I have because divide and conquer is a lot more strategic anyway.
Yeah.
And also it allows us to each have autonomy over decision making for certain parts of the business, which right. I think is healthy.
Yeah.
So stay in your lane.
Yeah. It sounds like communication is key, mm-hmm. right, from what you're saying. What would you say, like, have you ever experienced it maybe from a learning lesson where you realize, like, oh, it was because of lack of communication that now you're like, okay, this is why we have to be so vocal? Because I feel like that is something a lot of people who aren't as, you know, people like to think relationship isn't about strategy, but there is, like,
totally
right, but there is totally. Though, right, like, you actually do have to implement certain habits that seem too structured,
yeah.
but are key, like, pillars to successful for relationships, right?
Yeah, you know, I think it's quite interesting when we think and zoom into relationships in general. Yeah. We work on different facets of our life, okay? Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to be healthier. I want to progress in my career, my mindfulness practice, yeah. all of these different facets. And relationships are typically the last thing that we want to actively work on. Mm-hmm. Nish and I have been like, we are both very passionate about giving our relationship everything we have, okay? Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. it's an area of life that I am constantly learning about.
Yeah.
So I read books on relationships, yeah. how to better my communication, yeah. You know, how to show up as a good partner, not just yeah. business books that'll tell me how to show up as a good leader or right. co-founder, you know, right. it's also about Nish and I.
Yes.
And fact of the matter is that, God forbid, if something happened to us, mm-hmm. Array would suffer.
Right.
And neither of us want that. So we work really hard at our relationship. And there are a lot of strategies that we have. We're constantly learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been together for 10, 11 years. Oh, and it wow. still feels, yeah, almost, well, 11 years in May. So we just celebrated 10 years. But, you know, it still feels like we're dating, mm-hmm. but like in a very strong, healthy relationship where yeah. we're constantly communicating. We know what works for the other person, mm-hmm. and we just treat each other with respect.
Yeah. You mentioned you read or have read like relationship books. What would you say is the biggest takeaway? Because I'm huge on that too. I love listening to podcasts and reading books. I recently was going into like the John Gottman.
Oh my God, so good.
Yes. And it's funny because he's such like a quirky little nerd, but it is so like powerful the way he explains it and like all the statistics around their research and like the data that shows. And I'm just so impressed because mm-hmm. no one in modern day, like it's probably growing, but like hasn't in the past talked about it this way mm-hmm. because everyone thinks it's just supposed to feel natural.
And totally.
And like there's certain parts I think like are supposed to click naturally, but then to grow it, like anything in life, you actually have to implement certain strategies. But what has been probably like your personal biggest takeaway from any relationship advice or book?
That you cannot approach things from an ego perspective, okay? Mm. So mm-hmm. I think that human beings, just in general, we mm-hmm. have egos, yeah. you know, and we just want to be right. Mm. And I think that understanding when it's okay to let something go because it's too small and too big a waste of your time.
Yeah.
So I think just understanding, okay, like, when can I just let something go? Like, just understanding, okay, like, what's worth fighting for?
Right.
Okay, there are certain things, yes, fight for it.
Yeah.
Obviously figure out a solution and make sure that, you know, you're stepping away in the middle of an argument, you know, so that yeah. both parties can cool down, ensuring you have tools when you are kind of having more of a debate, like how do you speak to one another? Mm. Are there certain like boundaries that you don't cross?
Yeah.
Things like that. But also just being aware, okay, like I'm not going to fight about every little thing, you yeah. know, because I think it's human tendency to wish that your partner is a certain way, but yeah. you have to accept your partner as who they are, mm-hmm. you know? And of course, compromise and all of that. Like, I don't mm-hmm. think anyone should be in a shitty relationship, but right. if your partner is an awesome person and you love them and they're your biggest cheerleader, mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have to be exactly like you, mm-hmm. you know? And just understand what you're going to fight about
yeah.
and what's worth it for you and what isn't.
Yeah.
So
what about spending time together, right? Because you guys do business together uh-huh. and you also probably live together and you're married and everything. So how do you personally find healthy balance with your girlfriends and like your alone time? And then also just like doing things on your own, right? Like, you know, I feel like one of my girlfriends is always like, how do you, you know, not spend, like, why do you like to spend like a certain, only a certain amount of time with your partner? Like, it seems like, my friend was like yesterday, she's like, I would be like way needier. And I'm like, well, there's definitely a younger version of me that was more needy and like loved to spend a lot of time with my ex-boyfriend. But I realized like the balance is really healthy. And that's also something that a lot of books and podcasts I have read talk about a lot, is like finding time for yourself and then your social circle and then, you know, with your partner. But what have you found has been healthy, and especially as co-founders, like you guys are running the same business, right? So like, how does that work for you?
So everyone should, if they're interested in relationships or psychology or anything like that, should read the work of Esther Perel. She has two great books. I'm obsessed. Mm-hmm. And something she talks about is the fact that if you look at human beings across history, we had tribes, and we never expected one person to be everything for the other person. Okay. Yeah. It's just not possible. And so expecting our partner to be our everything is not fair. And you should have your needs, like different needs, met from different people. And so Nish and I thankfully have always been very, very independent with a lot of trust and respect in our relationship. So, you know, I was a travel blogger at one point in my life. I would be away for months of the year. You know, we
While you guys were dating.
We did so much long distance throughout our relationship. I went to school after my undergrad in London, in the UK. You know, we were, we did a ton of long distance. And so we've always been very supportive of each other and our individual pursuits and careers. So I think that that balance has been like a very natural thing. In fact,
that's impressive.
COVID was the first year in our relationship where we actually spent the whole year together.
It,
that had never happened in the history of our relationship.
So that's like 8 years in?
8 years in,
Oh my gosh. Okay, wow.
Yeah, so we've always kind of been good communicators, and we've always had...
No wonder. Yeah. I can tell. I'm like, whoa, where'd you learn that, girl? Like, most people struggle with that. I'm like, okay, now I get it. Like, you've had certain periods of long distance. Like, I know some people that'd be like, oh, if I'm, like, you know, if I'm going to school there or if I'm taking X amount of months, like, away, like, this relationship is probably not going to work. And I feel like I've heard that programming so much. Not that I believed it, but, like, I think it's really amazing to hear you speak about your experience in that regard.
I think long distance, by the way, and time apart is, like, the best thing you can do for a relationship. In my personal opinion, I think it keeps things, like, spicy. Okay? You don't need to spend every waking day with one person. It's just not what you need to do forever and your whole life. Like, go fucking live your life. Enjoy it. Do your own thing. Find your own self. Like, who are you? You know? You don't need – your entire personality doesn't have to be hinged on, like, who your partner is. You can be an individual on your own. So now, in terms of, you know, how we spend time apart and together, during the workday, we barely see each other. We both do our own things. You know, we do sometimes a catch up at the end of the day or even at the end of the week, being like, hey, so what did you get up to? Because we've, you know, we've been away doing different things. Sometimes I'm away for an entire day, you know, doing meetings or working with my team or in podcast interviews, whatever, you know. So we have different functions within the business. And then I make time to do dinners, you know, lunches, spend time with my girlfriends. You know, I go on morning walks with them. I am very protective about the relationships I have outside of Nish as well. And so is he. You know, he has great relationships with his friends and great relationships all around. So we don't forget what we have outside of each other. You know, and that's our support system. And we love to hang out with each other's friends as well. So I think we have a really good balance, you know, and we've learned that across the course of our relationship. We also started our relationship long distance. So I feel like we've, because we, I mean, we started dating in our like early 20s, you know, I turned 21 with Nish. So we've kind of had to grow into our own individual beings to show up for each other as well.
I have to say that's like super incredible, because you know, I mean, like, obviously it goes to show with how long you guys have been together, but also just that, I don't know, I mean, I just, I personally, it's a little biased, but I just think today's culture is a little bit very like, oh, you know, this is not going to work, so like very on to the next type of thing, versus I feel like a lot of what you shared was very like, we worked through it and we communicated and, you know, you practiced and implemented a lot of good habits.
Yeah, I mean, this was also before, I think, the age of, you know, apps and stuff. And I think at the end of the day, like, Nish and I knew that we like very early on that we were each other's people.
Yeah.
You know, and there was, we were just going to end up together. That's kind of like, we just both knew that and we were going to make it work. So,
Ooh, you know. I love that. You know, it's like that saying, like, you know when you know.
Yes, right? I would think so, yeah.
Okay, so final few questions. We'll do like two from the card game.
Let's do it.
What activities make you feel like you are living life to the fullest?
Working out, traveling, things that bring me joy on a day-to-day basis, seeing friends, grabbing a coffee for myself.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be big, like the just simple small things as right? well. Yeah.
I think that's what we realized during the pandemic, the simple things. How do you measure happiness?
How I feel when I wake up every day.
Ooh.
Yeah, so just, okay, you know, have I woken up feeling like it's an exciting day and that I feel good in my life and where I am in my life? Yeah. I would say that, you know, that that's kind of my indication of how happy I am.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. Who do you want to be a year from now, and how can you start working towards that person?
Ooh, I love this question. Obviously, just the best version of myself, and I take steps towards that every day. I've talked about this before, but I do future you journaling all the time and essentially just write as though I am my highest self and like the version of myself that I want to be in a year. Right. And I get into details like what kind of habits does that version of me have? Like what's she doing when she wakes up? Like what's her day structured like? How's she showing up as a leader, a friend, a partner? And I take those steps every single day.
Whoa.
And so, you know, who we are a year from now is kind of a, it's a culmination of the habits that we have today.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I feel like, oh, this part of my life I need to work on, I get to work immediately because I know that I'm not just going to be that version of myself. You know, I have to work on it today.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's like a mic drop statement right there. Okay. Well, last question, something I ask every guest on the show. But in reflection of, like, everything we talked about and just, you know, your life in general, what would you say fulfills you in life?
Feeling like I'm making a difference in other people's lives. So I'm a very purpose-driven person. You know, I said earlier on in the show that I wasn't someone who started a business to start a business or make money. That was just never the that's just not what is something that's like fulfilling or something that drives me. I'm very fulfilled by feeling like I have a purpose and I'm able to make a difference in the world. And I feel like through Array, through my podcast, like I really do believe that I'm able to do that. And so that makes me really happy every day when I wake up.
Oh my gosh. I could not agree more with that. That's something for me, that was my intention with the show is to be able to just make an impact on one person's life. You know, I remember how I was when I was 20 years old listening to Tim Ferriss and Tony Robbins. But I, you know, obviously wanted like an older sister vibe too. And so I think that's where my intention came from. And when I just see like a DM or, and I'm sure it's same with you, when you see a message like in the, especially the early days, you're like, holy crap, like someone from all the way in Italy is like saying like, I love, you know, your show. I love your product. And I think it's like amazing to see how it can actually impact someone's life. So I like your answer.
Yeah, well, it sounds like we have the same answer.
I love that. Well, where can everyone find you? Share your social media for your both your personal and Array and the website.
So you can shop us at array.com. You can find us on social media at array.co. You can find me on social at Sif Hyder, and my podcast is the Dream Bigger Podcast, and it can be found anywhere where podcasts are found.
Yay, amazing. Well, I will link that in the show notes, and thank you again. This was really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
And that was all for today's reposted episode with Sif Hyder, co-founder of Array. As always, if you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to let us know by sharing this episode with a friend and on your Insta story and tagging at What Fulfills You and at Emily E. Duong on Instagram. For all of the goodies, including the card game and other merch, you can find them at whatfulfillsyou.com and enjoy 10% off with the code WHATFULFILLSYOU10. Again, everything is available at whatfulfillsyou.com, and be sure to find everything else in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. I will chat with you all in the next one.
a BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.